to the kitchen.
"You don't believe in walls?"
Galathon asked. "Not in a marriage," he said, his memories flooding back. "This was our home until Mal was born." Galathon gave him a moment before grunting in irritation.
"I didn't join this endeavor to listen to you wallow. What are we doing here?"
Toron advanced across the room to the cliff at the back and touched a curl of green in the stone. The cliff opened, swinging inward to reveal a secret staircase. Light blossomed across the ceiling as he led the way down. At the base of the stairs, a door blocked the way. Encased in anti-magic, the door was steel and stone, a formidable barrier. Toron stepped to it and touched the rune at the center, but it flickered and went dim. He tried again, but his attempt had the same effect.
"Don't worry," Galathon said. "I have a key."
He gestured to Severon and the Mind Reaver surged forward. Toron raised a hand.
"Wait!"
But the Reaver charged the door, slamming its armored skull into the barrier. Built to stop magic and might, the door cracked from the assault by the Mind Reaver. It retreated and slammed into the door again, blasting it open to allow them entry.
"Fool,"
Toron growled.
"You just activated the defenses." "You should have said there were defenses,"
Galathon said.
"I didn't think you'd go bashing through the walls," Toron snapped. "Now you've activated unity."
They leapt through the opening, and Toron's gaze swept the secret chamber. Lining the exterior, reservoirs of magic contained all 9 of Elsin's magics, while strategically placed tables served as a workspace. In one corner was a small basin with a reservoir of boiling magic above, a forge for a guardian. The floor at the heart of the room began to rise, hands and arms appearing, followed by jaws and a large torso. The sentient was a combination of various magics, the light, air, stone, and water flowing together, merging and separating in complicated patterns. The spell was unique, crafted with great care by Elsin's own hand, a supreme guard for her secret chamber.
"We are unity," it said, the combined voices giving it a sense of malice. "Your deaths have been ordered by Guildmaster Elsin."
"Keep it busy," Toron growled. "I'll find what we came for."
Unity sent a blast of light, hot enough to sear through steel, but the troll spun his axe, catching the light and deflecting it into the ceiling. Then he surged forward, sweeping his weapon across Unity's arm. Unity swiveled and aimed at the rock troll's back, just as the Reaver slammed into its body. The Reaver's jaws snapped shut on Unity's torso, its teeth rending the magic. But the sentient ignored the biting jaws, its head swiveling backwards upon its body, its arms catching the triangular bone, forcing it upward to expose the jugular. Then Unity's mouth shaped into long jaws and clamped onto the Reaver's throat. The beast snarled and rolled, fighting to dislodge Unity. Galathon bellowed in fury and swung his axe, managing to strike the sentient as the two titans fought. Toron paused and gathered his magic. Drawing on the source of fire in the room, he aimed a torrent of flames to strike Unity, burning its back. It released a screech of pain that sent a shudder down Toron's spine. It relinquished its hold on the Reaver's neck and flowed away, reshaping onto its feet a short distance from Toron. The Reaver stumbled back, blood dripping from the wound on its neck. It snarled, but the sound was tinged with pain. Unity turned on Toron with a vengeance, sucking the air from his lungs with a burst of magic. Toron dropped to his knees, his jaw working as he fought for breath. Unity stalked forward, but Galathon reached it first, leveling a blow onto its skull that sent it into the source of the fire, cracking the sphere and spilling flames onto the floor. The impact extinguished Unity's hold on Toron, who sucked in a grateful breath. As the sentient rose to its feet, Toron stepped to a rack of enchanted weapons, blades and hammers Elsin and Toron had crafted. Covered in dust, the weapons had never been used,
but their enchantments remained bright and lethal.
"You need magic to harm it,"
he shouted, grabbing the largest sword and throwing it to Galifon. The rock troll caught the blade and turned on Unity, attacking with both weapons. As they closed again, Toron sprinted to the tables and began to search, desperately pushing papers aside, hunting for any indication of where Elsin had gone. He flinched as fire blasted behind him, followed by a wounded snarl from the Reaver and a roar from Galifon. A gust of air slammed into the neighboring table, sending it shattering against the wall. Toron dived behind the rubble and sifted through parchment and books.
"Can you be any slower?"
Galifon roared.
"I'm not the one that broke the door," he shouted back.
Toron leapt to another table, and then another. Half the papers were burning, the fires spreading across the room from the broken source. Toron growled his frustration and kept searching. Then he noticed a map, half buried in rubble. Yanking it free, he scanned it for answers and realized what it displayed. It showed the kingdoms surrounding Blue Lake, but the coastlines were not accurate. It looked old, the leather worn and faded. The cities were not familiar, but a few he recognized from his study of history. Then he noticed the parchment attached to the map. The notes were written in Elsin's hand. They indicated the map was a copy of one created by the ancients, and that Elsin had sought one of their cities. But not just any city. The capital of the ancient civilization. The City of Dawn.
"I've got it!" he shouted.
He rose to his feet in time to see Galifon fly across the room and slam into the wall with bone-crushing impact. The Reaver charged the sentient again, but the Guardian caught the teeth with its bare hands and brought it to a halt. Then it began to force the Reaver to its knees. The Reaver snarled and writhed, fighting to break free. A blade of light extended from the sentient's chest and touched the Reaver's skull. Toron gathered the fire from the room, raising it up the walls and onto the ceiling. With so much fire, even Unity felt the heat, and it finally looked up. Toron sneered and turned the whole of the fire upon the Guardian. Churning into a tidal wave of flames, it smashed into the Guardian's flank and sent it across the wall, pinning it to the sphere of water.
"Go!"
Toron roared. He leapt for the stairs, reaching it only seconds ahead of Galifon and Severon. He glanced back and saw the fire wrapping around the sphere of water, tendrils of heat digging through the protection charms. Unity was already forcing its way through the trap, but the fire was only seconds from breaching the water's surface. Toron sprinted up the stairs and across the room, charging out the front door and diving onto the ascender. He slammed his hand on the rune as Galifon leapt to him, his Reaver only a step behind. The boulder descended an inch and then a foot. Toron cast a fire shield above the boulder and held his breath, counting the seconds. The fire pierced the water sphere just as Unity broke free, the two magics fusing together, the fire turning the entire sphere to superheated steam in an instant. The detonation filled the secret chamber and exploded up the stairs, obliterating the refuge in a fireball. The magic binding the ascender shattered and they began to accelerate. With fire and burning stones raining down around them, they plummeted down the cliff. Toron clawed his way to the broken mechanism and sent fire into the gap, the heat distorting the wheels until they rubbed against the stone. The air filled with the acrid scent of burning stone, but they gradually slowed, stopping just a few feet from the ground. Toron dropped from the edge. He stumbled down the slope and slumped against the trees, his eyes lifting to the burning hole in the cliff. Galifon and Severon joined him, and the troll abruptly slapped Toron's back, knocking him into the mud.
"You certainly like powerful foes," he said.
He grinned and licked blood from his lip.
"At least we know where we're going," Toron said, rising to his feet and removing the map from his pouch. "And where we'll find Elsin."
Chapter 19 Ethereal. The Griffin army marched at dawn. At their head, Alidian rode a white horse beside her mother. General Astyn, Princess Aura, Duke Senin, and General Shalric rode with her. Backed by 40,000 troops comprised of a smattering of races, they worked their way through the forest on their way southeast. Hundreds of supply wagons followed the army. Loaded with a thin layer of dirt, the wagons contained elven water and plant mages. As the army advanced, the mages planted wheat and corn, bringing the crops to harvest each afternoon so the cooks could make bread. The air was almost festive as the troops pushed through the bright trees, but when they reached the river that marked the border to the Empire, the army grew silent. Men and women cast wary eyes on the opposite shore. The scattering of trees was insufficient to hide even a small force, and the region was disturbingly empty. "No ambush awaits us," Alidian called, and her words spread among the army. "We'll camp on our shore for the night," General Astyn said. Duke Senin scowled. "We should cross the river tonight and press the advantage." Astyn ignored him. "General Shalric, can your dwarves build a bridge we can use to cross?"
"As you order," the dwarf said, a smile appearing behind his beard. "It will be done by morning."
Senin scowled and wheeled his horse away, barking the order to set up camp. Word of their arrival spread into Empire lands, and within an hour people assembled on the opposite bank. Women waved cloth in the air, while children raced about. Men assembled themselves with weapons in hand, the camp swelling as darkness fell. Princess Aura crossed with a number of guards, and the people received her like a queen, many of the women breaking into tears. Alidian dipped into her farsight, but saw no sign of danger for the princess.
"They see our arrival as their salvation," Elenir said.
"The people wish to be free," Alidian said.
"How many will join our army?"
"A great deal," Alidian said. Alidian watched them gather on the opposite bank. "Word of what Elsin did to Mal has spread. The people know the Verenai turned a child into a guardian and they're angry."
"Did the Verenai use such a curse on other children?" Devkin asked.
When Alidian nodded, he growled and looked away.
"Blasted Verenai!"
"The people finally know the truth about the Verenai," Alidian said. "And our forces will continue to grow as we cross the Empire."
"The Verenai deserve their fate," Elenir said, with uncharacteristic vehemence.
Devkin stabbed a finger across the river.
"But the smart strategy would have been to keep us from gathering strength, or even better, strike Seascape before we could gather. They're all but giving us a victory."
Elenir turned pensive.
"Tyria would never concede defeat so readily."
"But what is her plan?" Alidian asked, and gestured to the force on the opposite side of the river. "If we are permitted to gain strength from within Empire lands, we'll be strong enough to stand against the Empire's army."
"What do you foresee?" Elenir asked.
"Very little," Alidian admitted, lowering her tone. "We march east and then nothing. Perhaps if I had more time to focus..."
Elenir shook her head. "I suspect Tyria is guarding her plans carefully. We should retire to your training."
"And our army?" Alidian asked, gesturing behind her.
"General Astyn has things well in hand," Devkin said.
Alidian spotted Astyn speaking to one of his captains. The man had a quiet charisma that inspired obedience. Coupled with a creative and tactical mind, he'd kept an army of thousands in order. Even the planting wagons had been his idea. With Princess Aura at his side, who matched him talent for talent, even Duke Senin had complained less. The growing affection between Aura and Astyn was impossible to ignore, and further inspired the people, with some whispering that Astyn would make a fine king. Alidian did her best to keep those rumours to a minimum, not wanting the people to get distracted. Alidian retreated to a clearing outside the army camp with Devkin and Elenir. There she trained with her mother until night had fallen, but the previous barrier remained unbroken. Whenever Devkin or Elenir accelerated, she could not foresee their future. Frustrated and tired, Alidian returned to her bedroll, but sleep was slow in coming. Deep into the night, she wrestled with the mystery of Tariah's plan. Elenir woke her early, and Alidian rubbed sleep from her eyes. She fought her lingering fatigue as she ate her morning meal and hurried to inspect the bridge. To her delight, the dwarves had worked through the night to complete an epic bridge that spanned the gap. The river was hundreds of feet wide, but the dwarven army had thousands of stone mages, and all had worked to shape the great span.
"It's a wonder," Alidian exclaimed.
General Shalrick scowled.
"Another day, and we'd have walls and such. But I'm guessing you don't want to wait."
"Will it support us?"
"Aye."
"Then we should march," Alidian said, turning as General Astyn joined them. He'd been examining the bridge with a critical eye.
"General," he said, "your people never cease to amaze."
General Astyn signalled one of his captains and the army broke camp, preparing for the march. Alidian took a small party across to greet the gathering on the opposite bank. Thousands had flocked to the river during the night, and many bore weapons. Astyn had wisely asked Duke Senin and Princess Aura to lead the way, and the sight of a former Griffin Duke standing with their princess smoothed any doubt as to their purpose. In short order, the entire army began to advance across the bridge. Even as dwarves called on the stone to flow into walls that bordered the bridge, soldiers marched across its surface. Alidian stepped into the Empire, a chill prickling her skin. The last time she'd been in the Empire had been her escape from Dawn's Keep, and now she was returning with an army.
"What is your plan, Tariah?" she murmured, her eyes turning east.
Throughout the day, they advanced across the plains of the Eastern Empire. Villagers from every corner of the region flocked to them, the atmosphere filled with excitement as word continued to spread of their invasion. Shortly after midday, a light-cast bird soared down to them. At first, Alidian thought it was a Verinai watching their forces, but a moment later it hovered next to her to deliver a message in Raiden's voice.
"Tariah is in Herosion with the entirety of her forces," he said. "I've seen no sign of Maressa or Elsin, but they've built a capital for their empire and are prepared to defend it."
Alidian nodded in agreement. She'd seen glimpses of a city but hadn't understood its import. But understanding what she'd foreseen did not explain Tariah's intention. Was this also a feint? There had been no sign that the Empire was even trying to watch their invasion, all but ignoring Alidian's march across their lands. Then Raiden's message took a different turn.
"Some of the Verinai have turned against their guild," he said. "They've proved valuable allies and have insights we did not anticipate. I will not identify them lest this message is intercepted."
His tone darkened.
"It appears the Empire is not without surprises. Tariah has employed a great number of the Verinai to build a titan, a sentient larger than anything in history."
Alidian exchanged a look with Elenir and Devkin as Raiden described the titan, and her heart sank. She'd known Tariah was up to something, but a titan charm? Such a thing had never been created.
"I will send another message when possible," Raiden finished. "Until we meet, our hearts remain with you."
Alidian smiled at the shift in tone at the end of the conversation, recognizing the "you" was meant specifically for her. She'd thought often of Raiden since his departure, and yearned to be reunited. The bird flapped its wings and then disintegrated in a burst of sparks.
"We saw the bird," Astyn said, riding up to them with Princess Aura.
"What news?" she asked.
"Raiden has joined with a group of Verinai that stand against the Empire," Alidian said. "It appears the Empire is waiting for us in Herosion, where they've built a new fortress."
"Any chance the Verinai with Raiden are spies?" Princess Aura asked.
"Not likely,"
Devkin said from behind Alidian.
It would take a great deal for Raiden to trust a Verinai, and he is smart enough to recognize a spy.
If Tyria and the Verinai have built a fortress, Astin said, rubbing the neck of his steed,
they will be difficult to defeat. They will have the greater magic and the greater position.
Then we must be smarter, Princess Aura said. At our current pace, we're a week from reaching Herosian. Let us gather the people and lay siege to the Empire.
As the conversation shifted to tactics, Alidian glanced backwards. Dust billowed up from the column of soldiers, horses and foot soldiers, mages and magicless, and members of many races marched together. The column reached nearly to the horizon. With scattered trees and rocky hills, the landscape did not lend itself to travel, forcing them to narrow their march onto the road. Spread out as they were, and an overcast sky to darken the ground, an ambush would have been expected. Yet again, the Empire was disturbingly absent. She dipped into her farsight. Behind the walls of a fortress, the Verinai and the Empire army would be all but unbeatable, but they were essentially trapped. The rebellion would be able to gather a superior force and surround the city, caging the Empire in a single city. But why? Alidian could think of dozens of smarter tactics, and she was hardly the tactician that Devkin or Astin was. So what did the Empire have to gain by walling themselves into a defensible position? Time. The answer was obvious, yet only prompted more questions. By all accounts, time was against the Empire, for the more time that passed, the more magicless would join the rebellion. The Empire's chance of victory would dwindle with every defection until even their city fell.
What are you thinking?
Alidian turned to find Elenir at her side, a small smile on her face.
I'm sorry, Alidian said. Just lost in thought.
That was the look of an oracle struggling to understand. Alidian laughed and shared her thoughts. Astin, Aura, and the other generals had drifted away, leaving Alidian, Elenir, and Devkin in relative privacy. When Alidian finished explaining her doubts, her mother bore a frown on her face, an expression matched by Devkin.
It appears my expression was contagious, Alidian said dryly.
Devkin snorted.
Your assumptions are sound.
Tyria is patient, Elenir said. She planned her empire for a century, and a few months or years mean little to her.
But what advantage can they gain? Alidian asked. The people clearly do not favor the empire.
She gestured to the new caravan of villagers pulling into view.
Time will merely add to our strength.
They do not seek the greater army, Elenir said. They seek a lasting victory.
You think they have prepared magic that will devastate us?
Devkin asked.
Like the Titan?
Perhaps, Elenir said, but her expression was doubtful. She reached up and wiped the perspiration from her brow, grimacing as if in pain. Then she sighed. They could be crafting powerful sentients or guardians that will take them to victory.
The best traps invite the unsuspecting prey, Devkin said.
Nothing with your farsight? Elenir asked, her voice trailing off as she again wiped the sweat from her brow. Alidian frowned, her attention shifting to her.
Mother, she asked, are you well?
I am well, Elenir said airily.
But she was not. Elenir's face was pale and she swayed in the saddle. Her eyes fluttered in her head and she grappled for the reins, fighting to steady herself. Alidian reached out to her and their eyes met. Elenir's eyes were full of fear, of dread. Then her eyes glazed and she swayed in the saddle. Alidian cried out, but Devkin was faster. He leaned out of his saddle and reached out to brace her, and his hand passed through her body. Elenir's arm turned ethereal, the flesh and clothing turning ghost-like. Devkin stared at his hand in shock. Alidian leapt from the saddle and scrambled to her mother, her urgency drawing the attention of nearby soldiers.
"What's happening?" Astin asked.
Alidian reached out to her mother, but her hand, too, passed through Elenir's form. Elenir swayed in the saddle, her eyes shut, her words no more than a mumble. Panic engulfed Alidian, and she searched her memory for some sort of magic to offer aid. But she'd never heard of such a curse. Senin reared back in fear.
"She's turned into a spirit!" he cried. "Don't be a fool," Devkin growled.
But fear began to spread into the army. Astin shouted for order as soldiers craned for a look at Elenir, whose entire form was barely visible. Elenir's gaze briefly focused on Alidian, her eyes wide with fear. Then she slipped from the saddle, her legs passing through the animal as she fell. But she didn't strike the earth. She fell into it. Alidian dropped to her knees and frantically sought to find her, heaving great sections of the earth in her effort to locate her mother. Horse and man scrambled away from the waves of soil. Seconds stretched into agonizing minutes, but there was no sign of Elenir. The army gathered around the rapidly expanding hole, whispering and pointing. Earth mages jumped in and dirt flew. Still Elenir did not appear. Panic gradually gave way to mute horror, until Alidian was forced to accept the truth. Elenir was gone. Chapter 20 Elenir's Fate. The loss of Elenir hit the rebellion hard, and the entire advance ground to a halt. When searching for her physical form proved futile, Alidian resorted to her farsight, searching her mother's tree for any sign of her location. But her mother's future was invisible behind a storm of indecision. What was clear was the fear her disappearance had sparked. Rumors spread like wildfire that Elenir had been killed by the Empire. Although Astin tried to suppress them, Duke Senin supported the theory. Doubt and worry gripped the rebellion forces, forcing Astin and Aura to triple the night watch to prevent infighting. Devkin ordered a watch placed around the pit, but the soldiers kept their distance, leaving Alidian in the depths of the chasm. Already 100 feet deep, the hole had begun to fill with water, but Alidian doggedly kept to her search, fighting her desperation with movement. Devkin alone remained at her side, spattered in mud, a shovel in hand. The sounds of the camp died down until Alidian could only hear the scrape of Devkin's shovel. She glared at the earth as if it was a foe, wearily casting her magic to lift the earth and toss it onto the rim of the hole.
Alidian.
Alidian continued to dig into the mud, but every new depth failed to alleviate the terror in her gut. After everything she'd endured, the prospect of continuing alone instilled more terror than she could endure.
Alidian.
Don't, Alidian said, whirling to face him. Don't say it.
You need to rest.
I can't.
Alidian,
he said, his voice soft.
We can continue the search tomorrow.
I can't.
Alidian.
I can't do this alone. Her words faded into silence. Too ashamed to meet his gaze, she stared into the pool of muddy water until a tear fell down her cheek. She swallowed and tried to wipe the moisture from her face, spreading mud across her features. I can't do this alone, she whispered. She sank into the mud and stared at the hole. Her mother had been her family, her guide, her champion. She'd prepared for the mage war for decades, planned hundreds of contingencies in order to give them a chance at victory. If she was gone, that would leave the rebellion on Alidian's shoulders.
You aren't alone, Devkin said quietly.
Alidian shook her head. She's been the foundation of peace for ages, holding it together even when the council plotted against her. And what did I do? I destroyed Dawn's Keep. Devkin sat in the mud with a sigh.
She may be the greatest oracle in ages, but you are her daughter. She believes in you, or she would never have suggested you become an oracle battle mage.
Am I destined to lose everyone? She asked, her gaze turning to the sky. How many of those I care about will perish before this is over?
We are willing to die for those we love, Devkin said, his tone drawing her gaze. You are like a daughter to me, and I would gladly pay my life for you and your cause.
I don't want you to die, Alidian said. I want you to help raise your grandchildren, find a wife, and grow old together.
Devkin laughed wryly and rubbed mud from his beard, revealing the white mixed with the black.
I'm already old.
Despite her despair, she smiled. You don't act like it, you know. You are the best swordsman in the kingdoms.
Perhaps at one time, he replied with a smile. But I fear that title is owned by the one you love. You picked a good one, you know. Your father would be proud.
How can I do this? She asked, flicking mud off her hands. I need her.
I know, Devkin said. But whether it's today or 10 years from now, you would lose your mother someday and then you would stand alone. What defines you is not the loss, it is the legacy.
When did you become so wise? She asked.
When I got old, he said.
She laughed and he joined in. When her humor subsided, she did not feel the aching despair. Instead, it was confusion that tightened her features.
I don't understand, she said. I've never heard of a curse to make one's body ethereal.
Do you think it's an attack by Taraya?
Alidian shook her head.
I'm not sure. Ero knows they've created many new spells, but this doesn't seem like Taraya. If she had the ability to strike at someone in such a manner, why not strike at me? Or Princess Aura? My mother has no magic anymore, so Taraya probably doesn't perceive her as a threat.
You don't need magic to be a threat, Devkin said with a smile.
True, Alidian replied. But I can't see Taraya striking at her now. I'm the one she hates.
So what could it be? Devkin asked. Surely it was magic. Perhaps Marrow?
She's still with Raiden, Alidian said. But his comment gave her an idea. Marrow displayed a number of rare magics, and they frequently had unintended consequences. Elenir, too, had recently had a unique type of magic in her flesh. What about the poison? She asked.
What does that have to do with this? He asked.
She felt the urge to pace, but the sucking mud did not allow that, so she fidgeted with her hands, thinking aloud.
The poison was an enchanted parasite, Alidian said. It fed on her magic.
You think it survived?
Alidian shook her head.
When my mother used the horrending dagger on herself, she sucked the magic from her body, taking the poison with it. What if the poison leached something else from her flesh?
It could have taken what made her tangible, Devkin said. But why did it take so long to take effect?
Alidian shook her head, but the idea had brought her to her feet. She cast about for answers, and her thoughts turned to a conversation she'd shared with her mother. Alidian had been a child, and just discovered her mage sight.
Every color represents a type of power, Elenir had said. To manipulate magic, you must see the power and then seek to alter it.
Alidian held her small hand aloft.
I can see right through my hand.
Elenir knelt at her side.
That's because your flesh is merely a shell that houses your essence. So I could leave my body behind?
Elenir smiled.
No, little one. Your body cannot survive without your spirit. And your spirit cannot survive without the body. That's not what believers in Ero preach, Alidian said, jutting her chin out.
Religion is a conversation for another time, Elenir said, pursing her lips. For now, understand that your life comes from the joining of your essence with your flesh. Now, let us begin.
The memory faded and Alidian's eyes settled on Devkin. In hopeful words, she described the memory and its possible ramifications. Devkin was now on his feet, his expression hopeful as he hefted the shovel.
"You think she figured out how to use the horrending dagger to discard her flesh?"
Alidian didn't dare hope, but she nodded.
"The dagger must have severed the link between the two and the body gradually wasted away."
"If that's true, wouldn't you be able to see her with your mage sight?"
Her heart hammering against her chest, she stepped into the water at the base of the hole and turned her eyes downward, searching for any hint of her mother's essence. Now that she knew what to look for, she spotted it almost immediately. Another 100 feet down and to the north, a faint green form rested in a bend in the stone. Alidian had used her farsight to look into the earth many times since her mother's disappearance, but assumed it to be a shard of limestone.
"I found her," Alidian breathed.
"Is she alive?"
"I think so," Alidian said. "I'm going to try and bring her to us."
Instead of reaching for Elenir by stone or water, Alidian reached for Elenir's essence. It felt odd, like willing her consciousness to extend further than her flesh. At first it refused to obey, but then she changed her perspective and treated her own essence like a unique magic. This time her consciousness spread outward, expanding through and around the concerned Devkin and rising into the air. She looked down on her kneeling body, on Devkin standing nearby. It was disconcerting to view herself from outside, but her focus remained on her mother. Twisting, she willed her projection into the rock. She felt the grains of sand, as if they lingered on her feet after a day at the beach, only now they seemed giant, her consciousness a fine thread that passed through the solid bedrock. As she approached her mother, she found Elenir caught in a particularly dense portion of rock, where her ethereal form had finally come to a halt. Elenir looked exactly as she did in the flesh, but her flesh had turned a dark shade of green. Alidian reached out and hesitantly touched her mother's hand. To her relief, she felt the fingers on her own. Tightening her grip, Alidian began to draw Elenir upward, pulling her back through the bedrock to the hole above. Her mother had more weight than she'd expected for an ethereal form, and it took all Alidian's will to drag her to the surface. Alidian reached the base of the pit and returned to her body, still kneeling in the ground. She retained a desperate hold on her mother's hand as her fingers became corporeal. Then Alidian pulled her hand from the mud, and Elenir's hand appeared in the base of the murky water, greenish light illuminating the basin. Devkin gasped and scrambled down, but growled in frustration when his hands passed through Elenir's arm. Now, gasping for breath, Alidian managed to pull her up through the water to the surface, more light spilling from her flesh. Alidian reached out with her other hand and caught hold of her mother's arm, holding her aloft. It felt like holding water in her hand, and Elenir began to sink again.
"Mother!" Alidian cried. "You must come back to me!"
There was no answer, so Alidian pushed her consciousness into her mother's mind, sensing a spark of thought there. Elenir twitched as Alidian screamed into her mind, and then Elenir's eyes fluttered open. Weak and groggy, Elenir managed to look at Alidian. Tears blossomed in Alidian's eyes as she clung to her mother, and then Elenir seemed to shake herself and rise, but she fell through the water before Alidian managed to catch her.
"Your flesh is gone,"
Alidian exclaimed, her voice strained from the effort.
"I'm not sure how much longer I can keep you here. I think when the poison left your body, it leached away your flesh."
Elenir, now in full command of her faculties, seemed to understand. Closing her eyes, she gathered herself, and the green light began to coalesce. It brightened as it merged, and Devkin raised a hand when it became blinding. A blast of energy and light sent Alidian into the mud, ending the link she'd used to retrieve her mother. Alidian scrambled to her feet, hoping to catch Elenir before she descended back into the stone. But her mother fell into the water, splashing both of them as she landed on her knees. Elenir's body was still made of green light, but it had regained a measure of solidity. Elenir reached down and lifted the water, allowing it to pour through her fingers, marveling at the feel of the liquid. Abruptly a shout came from above as soldiers converged on the hole, drawn to the burst of green light. Elenir knelt before Alidian and embraced her, the contact exactly as if she was still flesh and blood.
"Daughter," Elenir said, her green eyes piercing. "I'm sorry."
Confused, Alidian shook her head. "You act as if you knew this would happen." Elenir smiled.
"I did."
Alidian stared at her. "You did this to yourself?"
"Did you really think I'd be satisfied being helpless?"
Elenir smiled, her eyes flicked upward to the sounds of approaching soldiers.
"Answers will come in time, but I must go. They should not see me like this."
"Why?" Alidian asked, trying to hold on to Elenir as she slipped toward the pit wall. Elenir looked back and smiled, motioning up to the top of the hole.
"They will fear what I have become. Tomorrow night, in your tent, I'll come at midnight."
Elenir dived into the stone, taking the light with her. An instant later, soldiers appeared on the rim of the pit, calling for answers. Devkin stared at Alidian, his face a mask of confusion. Before he could ask what had happened, Alidian shook her head and gave the answer.
"It doesn't matter what she is," she said, and then sank into the mud, not caring that she was now covered.
"It only matters that she's alive." Chapter 21. Friends and Foes. Raiden trudged through the night, rubbing his face to stay awake. Winter and her handful of Verenai had led them out of the city through the sewers and sealed the exit. Traveling south, they hastened through the night until they were certain there was no pursuit, pressing on until Marrow's wolf finally perished. The sentient slumped to the ground and the magic began to disintegrate. In tears, Marrow knelt beside the wolf and held its paw. Uncertain how to respond to the death of an unliving creature, Raiden patted Marrow on the shoulder. The girl brushed the fragments of magic on the ground, and they merged together into a young sapling.
"He was my friend," Marrow said.
"He can always make another," Jester said with a yawn, and Red elbowed him in the gut.
"He was a good friend," Red murmured.
Marrow sniffled, and then conjured a straw mattress under the sapling, where she curled up. In seconds, she was asleep. Raiden withdrew a blanket from the pack he'd retrieved outside Herosian and placed it upon her slumbering form.
"May we all fight as he did," Raiden said softly,
and then turned to the others.
"Make camp. I'll take the first watch with Winter."
Their eyes met, and Raiden added,
"I need to send a message to Alidian."
Winter flashed a knowing smile, indicating she knew he wanted more than a message. He wanted the truth. The others wearily set up camp. Most forewent a meal and reclined on their bedrolls. In minutes, the area fell quiet. Raiden and Winter sat at the edge of the camp, speaking in low tones. When the light-cast bird had been cast and sent, he leaned back against a rock.
"You have our gratitude for the escape," Raiden said. "But I want answers."
"I'm sure you do," Winter said, and flashed a faint smile. "Who am I? What am I doing? Am I a spy?" Raiden grinned.
"And?"
"I'm a master of water, earth, plant, and animal magics," she said. "Although raised and trained by the guild, I despise what it has become."
"Why?"
"My father loved the guild," she said, "and he hated my uncle.
I got along better with my uncle.
And he was?
Elson's predecessor, Winter said. It was he who made the guild mighty, before Elson subverted it.
Raiden measured the hatred on the woman's face and accepted it as truth. Tyria could have manipulated the events of their escape in order to infiltrate their ranks, but Raiden was inclined to believe Winter. Still, it made him wonder.
Why didn't you depart the guild?
It was my home, she said with a shrug. And if I'd left, who would remain to influence my people?
So others follow you?
She gestured to the camp, where a handful of Verinai lay slumbering on their blankets. I managed to identify those who felt as we did. We acted with caution, never letting Guildmaster Elson learn of my designs. Early on, I merely wished to change the guild's purpose. Then it became clear the height of Elsin's ambitions, and I knew the guild could not be redeemed.
You speak much like Toron.
She smiled, a soft expression that touched her blue eyes. At one time, he was a staunch supporter of his wife. I even considered him a foe. But all that changed when Elsin turned their son into a guardian.
Toron said she did it to save him.
She did it to save herself, Winter said. She couldn't bear the thought of a crippled child and wanted an heir. Make no mistake, her actions were born of a selfish soul.
Does Toron know how you feel about him?
He's merely a... I do care for him, but... She frowned. Blast you, is it that obvious? Raiden smiled at her consternation.
It's always harder to hide a secret when fatigued. Does he know?
Of course not, she snapped. He is fighting his wife and seeks to free his son. You really think it's the right time to profess my affection? She began to rise. He caught her arm.
I'm in love with a Lydian.
Winter rotated to face him, her irritation turning to surprise.
Does she know? She does, he said with a sigh. But she is an oracle, and I am not a mage.
Winter's eyes lit with understanding. And oracles are always joined to one with magic, she said quietly.
The bloodline must continue, Raiden said. Now more than ever.
It's possible a daughter between you and a Lydian would be an oracle.
And it's possible she would be magicless, he countered.
You haven't voiced your fears to a Lydian? She asked. Her statement cut to the heart of his doubt, and he looked away.
She behaves as if she does not know, or perhaps does not want to admit it. The entire rebellion rests on a Lydian's shoulders. To speak now would merely add to her burden.
So you would tell her after the war? She asked. Crush her after victory?
Those with a broken heart do not survive long in a war, he said, for they lack the courage to fight.
Winter released a long breath. The Verinai have destroyed much. Don't let your love for a Lydian be a casualty of this war.
You would have me doom her bloodline? He asked.
She shrugged and stood. Perhaps you should let your beloved have a say in her future. Winter slipped into the night, leaving Raiden alone at the edge of camp. Despite his fatigue, he considered Winter's words. He'd carried the weight of his doubt since he'd first fallen for a Lydian, but feared voicing it aloud. A Lydian could be watching through her farsight. With Winter, he'd spoken on impulse, and once it was out, he couldn't stop. As Runeguard, he'd studied Oracle history. One of the common tales was an Oracle in Sianna's ancestry that had loved a magicless soldier. She'd defied Oracle tradition and the Council's command by joining him in marriage. Their daughter had been an Oracle, but the weakest in recorded history, with most Verinai displaying more control and power than she. The Council did their best to hide the fact that one of their own was so weak,
keeping the populace from knowing the truth. He sighed and looked to the sky. Lit by stars, the grassland stretched in all directions, the occasional tree dotting the open landscape. Without mountain or forest to break the view, he still felt trapped. When weariness finally overpowered his gloom, he woke Jester and slept, rising with the others at dawn. They gathered their things and broke camp before turning southeast. As had become his habit, he kept his intentions vague. Marrow had taken to Winter from the moment of their escape, and the two talked and giggled like little girls, drawing smiles from Verinai as well as Jester. Initially, Red kept her distance from Winter, clearly leery of the Verinai, but Marrow's faith was contagious, and before long Red walked with them. Winter too seemed guarded with Red, but over the course of their journey it became clear the women were rapidly becoming friends. As they approached Crescent Moon Farm, Jester sidled up to Raiden.
"Who would have thought," he murmured, "the Slayer, the Verinai, and the Mad Woman as sisters?" "War makes strange allies," Raiden said, smiling as he watched Winter cast tiny gremlins from the grass, causing Marrow to laugh in delight and clap her hands.
"More, more!" she cried.
The entities quadrupled, with hundreds of tiny gremlins darting about. Red laughed as one of the cute creatures scaled her back and perched on her shoulder. Large flowers shaped the entity's eyes, and it peered down at Red, its lips of leaves opening to chew on Red's ear. Red picked the creature up and held it in her arms, tickling it and causing it to squirm. It wiggled free and skipped away, pausing just out of reach as if inviting Red to give chase. She feigned a mock growl and leapt after the gremlin, causing it to sprint away, clearly pleased. All at once a shout rang out, the sound causing the gremlins to scatter into the grass. In a flash of steel, Raiden drew his sword and Jester followed suit. Winter's four Verinai cast entities from the air and light, and in seconds the group collapsed into a defensive formation. Then men stood, rising from the grass on all sides. Armed with blades and spears, they wore makeshift armor and helmets. Raiden drew in his breath as more appeared, until hundreds of men and women were arrayed against them.
"How did we not see them?" Jester asked.
"She did,"
Marrow said, holding the last gremlin in her hands.
"But you already know them."
"Raiden,"
a voice called. A man threaded through the soldiers and stepped into view. Raiden breathed a sigh of relief when he saw that it was John, owner of Crescent Moon Farm and a member of the Defiant. Then Raiden recognized other members of the Defiant and lowered his sword.
"John," he said, sheathing his sword and striding to greet him. "It's good to see you."
"Aye,"
the man replied. The Defiant had already lowered their weapons and advanced to greet Raiden, Jester, and Red. Many had difficulty speaking, their eyes filled with emotion. Raiden had recruited all of them, but none had known he was the Soldier. Now all knew his name.
"Soldier,"
one murmured, his voice tinged with awe and gratitude, a sentiment echoed by many others. Jester and Red were equally swarmed, and all three greeted the Defiant like family. Overwhelmed by the outpouring of support, Raiden grasped their hands and smiled, greeting them each by name. Then Raiden looked beyond the Defiant and noticed the other men and women keeping their distance. Sullen and muttering to each other, they cast suspicious looks at Winter and her group of Verinai.
"John," Raiden said, stepping to the farmer. "Our companions aided in our escape from Herosian. They are true allies of our cause."
"If they have your trust, they have mine," John said airily, and raised his voice. "These Verinai have joined the Soldier. Kindly lead them to the farm, where they can have respite from their journey."
The Defiant joined Raiden and the Verinai, but the vast majority of the force continued to keep their distance. John engaged Raiden in conversation as they advanced towards his farm.
"The Empire began retreating from the smaller villages weeks ago," he said. "We heard Alidian destroyed Dawn's Keep and then tales of the battle at Sky Keep. I figured the invasion was coming, so I summoned the Defiant and began gathering support."
"How many?" he asked.
He swept a hand at the army.
5 contingents like this one."
"You gathered 3,000 to fight the Empire?" Jester asked, joining them.
John laughed dryly.
"Holly gathered 3,000.
Jester burst into a laugh at the mention of the diminutive woman, and Raiden grinned. John's wife was shorter than a dwarf, with the fight of a rock troll. As a mother of 7, she was already a captain of her house, but it appeared she'd now made the leap to general of an army. They crossed a hill, and the farm came into view. Nestled into a curve between 2 rocky hills, the farm was aptly named. Built by John's grandfather, the large farmhouse and barn were solid and spacious. John had added a treehouse in a great oak, the fort shaped like a ship that delighted his children. Normally empty, the farm was flooded with people. Hundreds of tents lined the front and back field, placed in neat lines that allowed for movement and vision. The house had been fortified in case of attack, as had the barn, with battlements added to the roof.
"All this? In just a few weeks?" Red asked, joining them.
"Holly?" Jester asked.
John sighed.
"Holly."
They laughed together and descended to the camp, where they were greeted by more Defiant. The bulk of the army seemed keen on meeting the soldier, until they noticed the Verinai. Many scowled, and some spit on the ground. John barked an order and they reluctantly dispersed. John led them inside the front door, and Raiden looked about in admiration. Gone were the furniture and decorations that had graced the beautiful home. In its place stood tables with maps and weapons, and former Griffin soldiers were grouped around a shorter figure at the head of the table. With armor over her dress, Holly barked orders to the grizzled veterans, and they accepted them with a nod. Departing to carry out the commands, they paused to greet Raiden and his lieutenants before exiting the command center. A crying child came up and pulled on her knee, and she picked him up, comforting him while still issuing orders. In short order, she'd organized the arrival of new troops, overcome challenges with the supplies, and calmed a young child. Then she turned to Raiden and glared.
"About time you got here,"
Holly said. Chapter 22 Holly's Army. Jester laughed and strode forward.
"It appears you've gained more children since our last visit."
"Aye," Holly said, her lips twitching with amusement.
"They needed a commander, but the Empire killed or imprisoned the officers that resisted, so they're stuck with me."
"They're lucky to have you," Red said, moving to embrace the woman.
"It's good to see you again."
"Hello, dear," she said, her features softening before she turned back to Raiden.
"So you were the soldier all along?"
"Indeed," he replied. "I'm sorry I had to lie to you."
She gave a dismissive wave.
"No way you couldn't. Now, where's the invasion?"
"Alidian should reach Herosian in a week," Jester said.
"The Empire is ready for her," John said.
"We know," Raiden said. "We scouted the city and attempted entry, but Taria foresaw our arrival."
"How did you escape?"
At the back of the group, Winter stepped into view.
"It was I that helped them escape."
Holly scowled and her eyes flicked to Raiden.
"A Verinai? You should have killed her."
"She and her companions risked their lives to help us," Red said, her tone gaining an edge. "They are friends and allies."
The tension rose until Marrow giggled.
"Siblings always quarrel, especially Toron and I. You should see the scars she inflicted."
"And who is this?" Holly asked.
"Marrow,"
she said, darting to Holly and engulfing her in an embrace.